Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, away we go. Here's hour two. The number is 888-914-9149. Love to talk to you, and I've got some lines open, which is unusual. So please step forward and grab one. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Mary Lou in Westminster, California. Hi, Mary Lou. Hello, Mary Lou. All right. Mary Lou is not ready.
Hello there.
So, young Thomas, let's get Mary Lou sorted out, okay? And we'll bring her back on when she's ready. Let's go to Joseph now in Fountain Hills, Arizona. Hi, Joseph.
Hello, Patrick. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
Thank you. My question is about the lady that was, about the lady that... they couldn't have conjugal relations for the purpose of marriage.
Right.
My question is, how can one actually stay in a church that's, if they choose to do pleasure one another outside the marriage act, is how can they stay in a church that sends them to hell? And it's just like all the people in the world, masturbation and sending all those people to hell because they choose to please themselves. I just, I'm not quite understanding that, a self-defined form of salvation pointing to confession and absolution. It just it doesn't make sense in light of the gospel message of Jesus's redemption for our souls and our bodies.
Right. That's a fair question. So let me answer it this way. I'm sure you've heard the phrase natural law, right?
Yes.
Okay. So natural law is part of God's revelation. And what I mean by that is St. Paul talks about how in Romans, for example, he says that nobody can really deny that God exists because the evidence of his existence is all around us. You can see in the cosmos that God exists. So he's actually appealing in a way to natural law by virtue of the evidence of things as they are. So he's pointing out that God reveals himself to us, first of all, in what we would call natural revelations through the cosmos, through the laws of gravity and things that we can see, that there must be an orderer above the natural order, a mind, a person above the natural order. So he's taking a kind of first step in the direction of showing the way in which God reveals himself to us through nature. He also, of course, reveals himself to us in a higher way, in a more powerful way, through divine revelation, through the Holy Bible, through the preaching and teaching of Jesus, through Jesus himself, etc. So that's a higher order of revelation, but it doesn't do away with the lower order of revelation, which is through the created things. So natural law is a recognition of God's revelation as to how things should be used, how to make proper use of a thing. So the goal-orientedness of any given thing, let's say some kind of artifact, or in the case of a human body, an organ like the eye has a purpose. And we know that the structure of the eye is ordered toward a goal, and the goal is to see. And the ear has a goal. It's there for the purpose of hearing. So the first part of the answer that the church gives is, let's step back and look at the purpose of the body. What was the body made for? And we can see in our human bodies, male and female, that we all have complete bodily systems, like the nervous system. You have a complete nervous system in your body. You have a complete digestive system. You have a complete circulatory system. You don't, however, have a complete reproductive system. It's the only one of the bodily systems that requires something else in order to function, or in order to achieve the goal that it's aiming toward, which is procreation in the case of your reproductive system. So this is where we see there's a complementarity between male physiology and female physiology. And if you consider female physiology as such or male physiology as such, the reproductive system doesn't make any sense without recourse to the complementary other, male to female, female to male. So when we look at our bodies, we see they too have a goal. And the reproductive system is ordered toward procreation. Now, this doesn't mean, of course, that every use of the reproductive system, every marriage act or sexual intercourse will result in procreation. In fact, most of the time it doesn't. But that's the goal that's built into it. That's the purpose that it's there for. It's not there for, from a physiological standpoint, primarily pleasure, just in the same way that food, which brings you pleasure, is not intended physiologically for the sake of pleasure. It's physiologically intended for you to survive. And your body won't survive unless you eat food. It just so happens that God created things such that food is pleasurable. And maybe that's in his wisdom why he created food for human beings to be pleasurable, because if we didn't take any kind of pleasure in it, maybe many people wouldn't make it. They wouldn't live because they wouldn't bother to eat. So I'll use that as a parallel. But in the case of the sexual act, what is happening here in a misuse of that is it's being used in a way that's solely for pleasure if it's not ordered toward the possibility of human life. So what the church is saying is God has a plan for your life. He loves you. He wants you to be happy. And it may be that his plan for your life is to bless you with children. So the church doesn't damn anyone to hell. The church doesn't send anyone to hell. The only people who go to hell are the people who send themselves to hell because they die in the state of mortal sin. In other words, they obstinately refuse what the Lord wants them to accept, which is the truth. He says, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. And if somebody refuses to know the truth and they just, to the point of death, they just say no, well, he sends himself to hell. The church has no power to send anyone to hell, but the church does have the authority, as Jesus said in Matthew 28, verses 19 and 20 in the Great Commission, to go into the whole world, make disciples of all nations, baptizing, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And so this is one of those things, that the use of the marriage act in marriage should be ordered toward the possibility of procreation. I'll give you an example from the Bible where that didn't happen. It's in Genesis chapter 38. And it's a story about a man named Onan, O-N-A-N. And he had the duty, the obligation, to sire a son with the widow of his brother. And he didn't want to do that. He didn't mind what was necessary to cause her to have a baby. That part he was fine with, apparently. But he didn't want to have her with one of his children that wasn't going to be a son for him. So what we read here is that when this happened, he withdrew, and this is where the term onanism comes in, and he withdrew, and he did not complete the act in the way that God intends it to be so, and so God killed him. Verse 39, but Onan knew that the offspring would not be his, so when he went into his brother's wife, he spilled the semen on the ground lest he should give offspring to his brother. And what he did was displeasing in the sight of the Lord, and he slew him also. So he was struck down dead because of this sin of withdrawal. And that is part of this bigger picture when we talk about sexual activity within marriage. What the church is saying is what God is saying, and that is marriage is sacred, and it is intended for the mutual love and intimacy and friendship of the couple, but it's also fundamentally and primarily ordered toward procreation. And if you engage in this privileged activity that married people have a right to do so, but you do it in a way that creates an impossibility for the possibility of procreation, that is a serious sin. And so for the church to point that out is not sending anyone to hell. It's just saying, like, hey, the bridge is out. If you go down this road, the bridge has been washed out by a storm. Don't go down that road because you'll go over the edge and into the river. you know, we should be grateful that the church teaches these things to us so that we don't wind up making some serious mistakes. Now, there's plenty more to say. I'll leave it at that, Joseph. I'm sure you probably have a rejoinder to all of that. What are your thoughts?
Can I just, my thoughts are, one, I appreciate you making that clear. I also appreciate the church admonishing us in her ways, in the ways of truth. I also believe that if we listen to the church, that we either have a choice to either make our ways correct or go to hell. And I know that there are many, 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 many Catholics out there who proclaim to be Catholics that, you know, don't know this teaching.
Yeah.
And there are people that are going to, you know, burn in hell. And my whole thing is, I just don't, the whole thing about Jesus and salvation and him giving us life to the fullest is not necessarily mm-hmm. about some outside organization telling us how we're supposed to live out our salvation, but rather he is, the Holy Spirit's a gentleman, so that we can rise above with our acts of will to do the things that are necessary for salvation. I just have a real problem with that. And, you know, and another thing, I mean, the whole mandatory celibacy thing's another one. You know, it's like if you know, mandatory celibacy is another thing where somebody would be like, well, you're choosing, it's not mandatory celibacy, it's optional.
Right.
Well, it's not optional because a married person cannot become a priest because it's a rule. And I'm just saying that Jesus is above, I think Jesus is above all the rules and the man-made rules that we make. While I respect the truth of the church's teaching, while I respect all these, you know, logical explanations of things, I think God, because Scripture says God looks at the heart.
I agree. Let me jump in here, Joseph. You're making some important points here. Remember that what the Proverbs say in Proverbs 14, verses 12 and forward, there is a way that seems right to a man, but its way ends in death. And so not everything that you may say, well, it's, this seems like the right thing for me to do, or this, and I'm not going to listen. I'm not saying you personally, but just you rhetorically. There are plenty of people, and probably all of us at one time or another, who get notions into our minds that, well, this is fine, or that's fine, or this is not bad, or this is bad. And as the Bible says, it seems right, but its way ends in death. And the church doesn't want that, and Jesus, of course, doesn't want that. Remember that Jesus himself said to these apostles that he commissioned to go out and to teach all those things he had commanded, he said, he who listens to you listens to me. He who rejects you rejects me. That's in Luke 10:16 if you want to look it up. And this is one of those various grants of authority that Jesus gave to the apostles so that he's reminding us that we're supposed to listen to the teachings that come to us from him through the apostles. And this is why he says in Matthew 28, teach them to observe all that I have commanded you. Not everything that Jesus commanded is set forth in Scripture. There are things that Jesus didn't say that the apostles did say. Take, for example, St. Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. He talks about how you're not supposed to receive communion if you're in the state of mortal sin, or if you don't discern or believe the body, the real presence of Christ, as an example. So, I mean, there's something that Jesus never said. He never talked about that, but he told the apostles that they had the job to teach all those things he had commanded, and they did, this being one of them. So one of the dangers that is inherent in what you're talking about here is to say, just because it doesn't seem right to me, therefore the church must be wrong, and that Jesus is above all these man-made rules. Well, yeah, of course, he's God. So I freely agree with you. I grant you that he's above all these things. But it was he himself who said, listen to the church, listen to these apostles. Also, for that matter, talking, since you brought up the issue of celibacy. Let's not forget it was Jesus himself who invokes this. In verse 12 of Matthew 19, he says, some are incapable of marriage because they were born so, some because they were made so by others, that refers to castration, some because they have renounced marriage for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Now, listen to this. He says, whoever can accept this ought to accept it. So this discipline that comes directly from Jesus himself, who, by the way, was a celibate, continent man, he's saying that there are some men, and women too, of course, but we're talking about the priesthood here, for whom this is a calling. This is something that the Lord is asking of them, and they should accept it. If they're being asked to do this, they should accept it. So I personally would rather see the church's discipline of priestly celibacy in light of what Jesus says. This is a calling. This is a gift. Not everybody is called to do this. Some people are, and those who are should accept it. That situates it, in my view, in its proper context, which is it's a free choice. It's not the Catholic Church grabbing the guy by the back of the neck and saying, you're never going to get married. We're not going to let you get married. It's like looking through the telescope at the wrong end. So there again, I've said a lot, but I'll throw it back to you, Joseph. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are I would like to have a better church and have some married priests that have an example with their children instead of homosexual-filled and pedophilia-filled and homosexual recruiters in the seminary and the Vatican all screwed up with its finance. I would rather see a healthier church than we have today.
I would too. But you know what? This is the church that Christ established, warts and all. And one thing to remember, Joseph, is that those men who are priests, who are committing the sin of sodomy and sexual sins against boys and other children, they're not fit for marriage. So marriage is not going to solve their problems. They would not make good husbands. They would not make good fathers. So just the fact of a priest being married or a married man becoming a priest, that in itself won't solve anything if the man himself is deeply depraved and doing things like that. So marriage is not a solution for those problems.
No, and I'm not coming against the celibate people that are wonderful and have a unique relationship with Jesus by any means.
Yeah, I hope I don't come across, Joseph, like I'm arguing with you. Really, what I'm trying to do is to say, to be more, to explain it better so that at least you know where I'm coming from on this issue, so that you don't think that I'm just saying, well, the church says it, therefore you got to do it, you know.
Well, no, I mean, but that's kind of what the church does. It pontificates. And you know, my whole thing is, you know, God does look at the heart. I mean, you know, a lot of times on your show, Patrick, there's a lot of, you know, rules and black and white things and things being said about grievous matters. And, you know, if those of us who've listened for a long time are understanding that, you know, you are speaking what the church is teaching, and therefore it leads me to interpret how can somebody actually stay and live in a church that is looking at the rules rather than the heart and the salvation and the redemption and the friendships and the acts of will and the, you know, that we have.
I would say that the church does both.
Through our baptism.
Yeah, I would say that the church does both. In my experience, I mean, I've been Catholic for 62 years, and I know that's not as much as some people, but it's enough time for me to kind of get a good look at the church over a period of time. And you're right, there are hypocrites, no doubt about it, in the clergy, for example. There are plenty of lay people who are hypocrites too, no doubt. But that doesn't change the truth of the message. Even if there are people in the church who don't live the message or they lead double lives or whatever. But the rules, when you think of them as rules, think about what it would be like if you were to go out in your car and there were no laws regulating driving. There were no lane stripes, no stop signs, no speed limits or anything like that. Most of us would be injured or dead if we went out in the car because it would be complete mayhem. So don't be down on rules just because they're rules. There's a reason for some of these rules, is to help people be able to live and flourish in peace and happiness. And so if the church says, you know, one of the things, one of our rules is we're going to go to Mass on Sunday. It's kind of like when you're growing up, or maybe you're married now and you have kids of your own, and you say to your kids, hey, we're having a family dinner at 6 p.m. Everybody's got to be there. You can't go have dinner in your room by yourself. We want everybody here. That's a rule, but it's a rule for a good reason, to foster mm-hmm. family togetherness. So
sure.
I grant you,
all right,
depending on how you look at it, you can. It's kind of like, is the glass half full or half empty? I'm proposing that you take the glass is half full approach rather than a half empty approach. Something to think
about. Sounds good. Yeah, the road is narrow, and salvation may be very narrow according to what we're hearing. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. And Joseph, you know, you're a good guy. Thank you for being willing to listen to my point of view. Remember that Jesus said that the road is wide and well-traveled that leads to hell, to perdition, and the gate is narrow, he says, and few find it that leads to eternal life. So strive, strive, he says, to enter by the narrow gate. I mean, that's for all of us, me included. So thanks, Joseph. I really appreciate your time and attention. Thank you. Coming right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find out more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Hey! All right, welcome back. Mary in Relevant Radio app land sent me a note a little while ago. And her question has to do with the marital act. Again, parents, exercise caution. This is not a suitable topic for children, but know when to turn the radio down for a few minutes and turn it back up. Fair warning, ready, steady, go. So Mary says, with regard to the marital act, what about the marital act for those of us who are senior citizens, age 70? Both widow and widower coming together in marriage this summer. We are beyond childbearing years. I am so confused on what is allowed and what is not. Does God not see the pleasure in true love that he gave us? Okay, so I'm happy to offer a clarification, because I imagine that there are plenty of people for whom this is not a topic that they really have ever heard much about, probably have never heard anything from the pulpit at Mass, and maybe understandably so. So this is an important question that you're asking. The church teaches what God himself shows us in Scripture, that marriage between a man and a woman is intended for two goals. One is to be open to the possibility of procreation. And second, a close second, is the intimacy, the friendship, and the pleasure that is built into these activities for married people. And God has established marriage and the physical intimacy dimension of marriage for those two purposes. And to use an analogy, it's similar to eating food. I mean, God made us such that we need to eat food so that we can metabolize and stay alive. But he also made us in a way so that we derive pleasure from the food that we eat, the way it looks, the way it tastes, anticipating what it's going to be like when we have dinner kind of thing. You smell the delicious food coming. So in a way, if you can think of that as an analogy, it's like that when it comes to the marriage act, because God made it that way. And if you were to, let's say, just gorge yourself on food and then go vomit it back up again so that you wouldn't have to deal with the responsibility of calories and what's in the food and what it might do to your body, that would be clearly an eating disorder. That would be a misuse of a good thing. So gluttony and enjoying the pleasure of the food without the responsibility that goes with it, clearly disordered. But the same is true in a different way. If you were just eating food and never experiencing any pleasure, that would be, to put it lightly, a real drag, wouldn't it? So in a similar way, God has created the physical intimacy portion of marriage for the husband and the wife for pleasure, with the added benefit that it tends toward procreation. So what about people who are beyond or even well beyond the childbearing age? Nothing is prohibited to you. And this is one of those maybe concerns that some people have. Well, what if they can't have children? Can they still engage in the marriage act? Absolutely. You could be 150 years old. And if you're capable, I don't mean you personally married, don't get me wrong, but a person could be 150 years old. And I realize it's, you know, obviously nobody lives that long, but let's just say you were 150 years old. If you're married, you and your husband have the right to enjoy all the pleasure that you can enjoy within the confines of Christian marriage. So the church does not in any way say that if it's impossible to have children, oops, sorry, you can't do that anymore. You have the right to this gift in marriage for as long as the two of you are married. As long as you're both alive, if one or the other dies, that's when the sacrament ends. So you have a lifelong right as a married couple to this good of marriage. And the only thing that the church says, I quoted from the Catechism earlier, maybe you heard me quote that, Mary, the only thing that the church reminds us as married people is, number one, within the confines of marital intimacy, you can't engage in activities that are degrading or objectifying or in any way coercive. You can't do something, for example, let's take pornography. You can't introduce pornography into the intimacy of marriage, because that now is introducing other people into what is intended to be for the husband and the wife alone. So there are certain things that are beyond the pale. That would be one. You can't do something that is unnatural. I'll leave it at that. But within what is natural and what is mutual self-giving and loving and is ordered toward the perfection of the act, all of those things are permissible in marriage. So I realize maybe some of those issues may not be part of your question, but for those who do wonder about those things, please understand the church is not saying you must have children or you can't engage in the marital act. The church says just be open to God's plan for your life. That's all. If you're open to God's plan for your life, and if you're not doing something, whether it be a barrier or a chemical or a particular action, if you're wondering about that, read Genesis 38, the section about Onan. If you're not doing something or making use of something that could prevent the possibility of procreation, you are encouraged by the church to enjoy this gift in marriage. I don't know how else I can say it, but Mary, it's an important question you're asking, and I'm glad you did, so hopefully that will be helpful. Let's see, let's get back to the phones here. Let's go to Mary Lou now in Westminster, California. Trying again, Mary Lou, welcome.
Hi, Patrick. I'm so glad to talk to you. We love you, thank you so much for your hard work.
Thank you.
My question is, my daughter wants me to go with her to a non-Catholic Christian church for Bible study.
Mm-hmm.
Can I do that?
Well, you can do it. You know, the distinction between can and should, you know, you can go.
Right.
The church doesn't forbid it, but should you go is the question. And my concern is always that, like I like to say, you are what you eat. So if you start consuming information and teaching that may be true, but it may very well not be true, or there may be an admixture of error in there, it will have a negative effect on you, even if it's subtle. So
that's exactly what I think.
Yeah.
So
now your daughter, is she Catholic or is she?
She should be. But she married out of the church, and her now husband talked her into going to his church.
Yeah. Common tale,
which
I'm afraid.
Makes me very sad.
Mm-hmm. So she's no longer practicing as a Catholic anymore, receiving the sacraments?
No.
Yeah. This, by the way, Mary Lou, if I can highlight this, this is a classic example of why the church says, you know, that that Catholic men and women should look for a Catholic spouse so that they don't have this division within the marriage. And that's not your fault. I'm just bringing it up as an aside. Well, what if you were to give her a copy of Surprised by Truth? It's a book that gives the testimonies of 11 people who used to be just like her, and they wound up becoming Catholic. That's one possibility.
I have.
You could. Oh, you have that book?
I do, yes.
I'd give it to her. I'd give it to her.
I'm going to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think I won't go, even though I love spending time with her.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't want to condone that in any way.
How old is she?
Oh, she's 44.
Okay. So has she been away from the church for a while?
Well, I guess probably 20 years now she's been married to him.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Here's
something else that I can suggest to you. This is free, and it's an article that I wrote years and years ago. It's I don't know if you have a pen handy, but if you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and then click under links and then click on articles.
Okay.
And I have an article that I wrote just for you. It's called Guess What, Mom? And it's a daughter.
Yeah.
It's a fictitious dialogue. It's a daughter informing her mother that she's now born again and she's found Jesus in a non-denominational church. And so it's a conversation between the mother and the daughter. And
yeah.
I bet if you were to read this, you'd probably recognize some of the things that you've heard her say before.
Sure. Well, I pray about it every single day of my life.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, keep doing that. Keep doing that. I would say get this article and check it out. It's free. It's there as a PDF. I would also suggest that maybe you just text her a link to the show page. There's this guy on the radio.
I talk mm-hmm. about it with them all the time. And I talk about your show.
here's a sneaky trick. Are you ready? Don't tell anyone I told you this, Mary Lou. Okay, just between you and me. Okay.
Okay, secret.
If you go to YouTube, there is a YouTube channel for the Patrick Madrid Show. I don't want anyone to know this. When you go there, click on where it says videos, and there are well over 100 video audio clips of the show on various topics, including some of the ones I'm sure she's talked to you about. Just grab the YouTube video link and text it to her phone and say, we were talking about this, and here's somebody who said something about it. I'll bet you she'll listen to it.
That is a good idea. Great. I will do that.
Give it a try. And then follow up maybe a week or so later with another one. So you can browse through all those different topics that are on the YouTube channel. And maybe you'll pick out a few other ones that might pique her interest. And maybe, just maybe, she might start thinking about these things in a different way.
I don't think she doesn't believe in the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, for some people, it just seems to be too hard to practice our faith. But I wish they would get a grip.
Yeah, well, they're lucky to have you as mom and mother-in-law. They don't realize the treasure they have in you. So keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Thanks, Patrick.
I mean it, Mary Lou. All right.
Thank you. Okay.
And try that YouTube trick. I'll bet you she'll listen. And wouldn't that be interesting if things start to change? Okay. Thanks, Mary Lou. Let's go now to Tom in Tucson. Good morning, Tom. And hey, welcome to Tucson, all of our new listeners there. We have a brand new station in Tucson. Welcome, Tom.
Hey, thank you. I've been a longtime listener and glad we've got some transmitters in our town. So you're one transmitter short of a full signal, but you're close and we appreciate it.
We're working on it, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Say, I wanted to call and thank you and again for just this wonderful show. And I wanted to express some sensitivity to my brother that called in earlier, talking about rules-based religion. Mm-hmm. I felt that. I remember early on when I first started listening to Relevant Radio, and I shared this with the screener. It's when I first started listening, I considered myself fairly conservative, but that would be a political thing. And it used to ruffle my feathers at how progressive Relevant Radio was. I mean, you know, I'd listen to Father Richard Simon and I'd be like, come on, man. Oh, there we go. Right there. There it is. Right.
Right.
Come on, man. There's mine. So it's funny how it changes, though, because you have these progressives that call in, liberals that call in and rail on you for being so conservative. And you've got conservatives and Orthodox that call in and say, how can you be so progressive? So keep up the good work. When you're ruffling feathers on both sides, it means you're in the mean. It's probably good.
That's a good point, Tom. Yeah, that's a good point. It's like, what's the old saying that, you know, when you start taking flack, you know you're over the target zone, right?
Right, right. Well, you know, and I did want to share something, and I guess, you know, we're created in the image and likeness of God. Mm-hmm. So if we think of these things as rules, they're not, you know, rules are the human condition. You know, you like to talk about eating and the need for, you know, nourishment. Well, we also have the need to respirate. We have to breathe. That turns out that's a rule. It's a rule that our heart has to beat. These happen to be rules if you really want to be that specific.
That's a good
point. You know, when we feel, when we feel constricted by these rules, it's usually because we have a desire that's disordered. And when we experience freedom, it's because we're worth living, you know, we're living within the design of our being. You know, I think for mathematicians and scientists, this must be easier, right? Because we understand truth. You know, the equation works or it doesn't. And if you try to force something outside the equation, you know, you can get a lot of people around you and you can get support and you can be brilliant with how you communicate. But if your equation is wrong, you're still just trying to perpetuate a fallacy. It'll eventually fail. Eventually, you're going to have to resolve the equation. You know, so anyways, I'm rambling.
No, you're right.
But keep up the good work.
Thanks, Tom. Everything you just said, I thoroughly endorse what you said a minute ago about rules and the way we're made as human beings. It reminds me of an analogy I heard somebody say long ago, that a train, like, you know, the kind that you have to stop at a train crossing on a road, the train is governed by the tracks. The tracks force the train to go. The train can't go left or right. It can only go where the tracks allow it to go. But imagine if you said, well, the train's just not free to do what it wants to do. Plop a train down in the middle of a cornfield. It's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to be able to fulfill its trainness, what it is made to do. So in line with what you're saying is that God created our humanity in such a way that those tracks that we're on, if we stay on them, we can do what we're intended to do and be happy. But if we get off those tracks and get into the cornfield, we're never going to be happy. Go ahead, Tom.
Isn't it strange how many people seem to be on a train to Santa Fe, but then they will scream and yell that they're not going to San Francisco? I mean, isn't that weird? I mean, what you just said triggered that mental image, but it's so true. Everybody screams and yells because the train's not going where they want it to go. That's the whole thy will be done, not your will be done. So that train analogy is awesome.
Well, thank you. I wish I could claim credit for it. I don't remember where I first heard it, but I do like it. And I really appreciate your call, Tom. You are... if you're a father and a husband, man, your family is lucky to have you because you're firing on all cylinders.
I haven't always been a good father and a husband. Unfortunately, I kind of failed in the husband area. So I'm civilly divorced, but praying for better, right?
Indeed. Well, hang in there, Tom. I'm glad I know you, and I'm glad you called, and I look forward to our next convo. Thank you. Quick time out. We'll be right back. Our studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. Learn how our sponsor can support your family with health insurance during 2023's open enrollment. Visit relevantradio.com/forester.
connected to the conversation, call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Okay. I really appreciate your emails. I really do. Please don't misunderstand me. And a whole bunch of them about the Marriage Act have come in. And they're different. They deal with different aspects of it. So since it's been on the table, we've discussed it a little bit today, I want to read a couple of the many emails that have come in the last hour or so. We won't be able to get to all of them for obvious reasons, but I'll do my best here. Just so a couple other ones. This one is tangential. This comes in from Cynthia, and she says, if it is not known that something is a mortal sin or sinful in general, a priest told me that it is not a mortal sin because there is no intention. Well, that's true, and I'd like to just elaborate a little bit on that. Keep in mind that something can be objectively sinful, but subjectively, your knowledge of it's being sinful, so let's just say, like you said, you don't know that this is sinful, and nobody ever told you, and you never reasoned your way to this conclusion. So from a subjective standpoint, you wouldn't be formally guilty of a mortal sin, even though materially it is a mortal sin. And so this is the part of the church's teaching on you must respect your conscience, but you also have an obligation to properly form your conscience. And so the obligation extends to knowing enough about what the church teaches and about just life in general that you would have a generally sufficient awareness that some kinds of things are sinful, other things are not sinful. So this is where you could say, if there's fault, let's say that you committed an action that you just genuinely didn't know was a mortal sin, or maybe you didn't know that there was any sin involved at all, it's possible that you could be culpable for not knowing, but you should have known. Like you should have paid attention and been more aware at Mass, let's say, or in other ways of studying. So that's something to keep in the back of your mind. All of us have to continue to grow in our knowledge. And there are times when you find out, oh, wow, I didn't realize that this is not something I should do. And of course, once you know that, then you make some course corrections. So yes, in essence, what the priest told you was correct. And I just want to offer my own little footnote to that. Thank you. So this is a Marriage Act question from Thomas, who's listening on the Relevant Radio Act. And it has to do with the catechism that I quoted from. He says, I understand the teaching on coming to completion outside of marriage, the Marriage Act, and what you read from the catechism. However, if for a physical illness reason, one or both partners do not have the possibility of procreation, then the teachings of the catechism don't say anything about that. But indeed they do. So I would just refer you back to the sections of the catechism that I had quoted earlier. And specifically, it's paragraphs, begin reading in 2360 and go all the way down to 2360 and 2370. These are the pertinent verses. But just to reiterate, it says there very explicitly, each and every act of sexual activity must be ordered per se to the procreation of human life. Now, when it says each and every marriage act, that means completion on the part of the man and or the woman. That's what it's referring to. Each and every. And it gives the rationale for this. It doesn't just say, well, here's the rule, live with it. It gives a great deal of explanation as to why this is revealed from God. So in paragraph 2370, every action, whether in anticipation of the conjugal act or in its accomplishment or in the development of its natural consequences, purposes, whether as an end or a means to an end, to render procreation impossible, is intrinsically evil. I won't explain it all over again because you already heard me do that. But I would draw your attention to those sections of the catechism because it is very clear and it is, may I say to you, it is complete. So thanks, Tom. Appreciate that. This one comes in from Adam, listening in Wisconsin. Oops, and he asked me not to use he asked me not to use his name, so I just did that. Sorry. So I won't read that email. Here is a different email that is coming from a listener who is listening. Where is he listening? Listening, I think, on the Relevant Radio app. And says, first, thank you, Patrick and Cyrus, for all you do regarding the marital act. Is it okay for the husband? Again, parents, not appropriate matter for children. Please do the right thing and turn the radio down for a minute or two. But it's an important question, needs an answer. So here we go. Fair warning. Is it okay for the husband to help his wife finish before the completion of the marital act? As long as it's open to procreation, the answer is yes. So all those things that are ordered, all those things that are not, you know, objectifying or degrading or coercive or any of those things that are not unnatural, anything like that, excluding those kinds of things, all those things that are natural and help to perfect the act itself are permissible to the married couple. So I hope that answers the question. Moving on now, and thanks for the email. Let's go first to Rhonda in Dubuque. Good morning, Rhonda. Welcome.
Good morning. My question is isn't the Spanish name Jesus the English version of mm-hmm. the name Jesus, and is it a sacrilege to use that name to use your child, the Jesus?
So if I understand correctly, are you saying would it be sacrilegious to name the child Jesus?
Yeah, because you're supposed to, you know, it says bow at the every person shall bow at the name of Jesus, and so I'm confused about that. Why it's okay to? I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding it, but isn't the name Jesus the version of Jesus?
Yes, you're
maybe
right.
I'm
That's
wrong.
The Spanish.
I don't know.
No, you're not wrong. That's the Spanish way of saying Jesus. And Josh, by the way, is a derivation of Yeshua from the Hebrew. It's another version of the word Jesus or the name Jesus. And in the United States, Josh is a common man's name. In Latin America, Josh is not a common man's name, but Jesus is. So those are variations on the same name. So in the context of naming a son Jesus or Josh, and in English we would just say Jesus, there's nothing inherently, how did you put it? Is it sacrilegious? No, it's not sacrilegious.
Right.
It's a cultural custom that it ultimately springs from wanting your child to bear the noble name of Jesus. And that's a good thing. So the naming of a child, naming of a son, that name is not sacrilegious or disrespectful.
Oh, glad to know that. Thank you.
Yeah, you're most welcome. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you. Nice chatting with you. Let's go now to Mary in Modesto, California. Hi, Mary. Hello, Mary.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here I am. I was putting you. I'm sorry. Good morning. Okay, so my question is, I'm not Catholic. I was raised a different religion. Raised Jehovah's Witness. And my husband he's full Catholic through the confirmation, or I'm not really know much about that, but confirmation and communion and baptism and all that stuff. And my daughter wasn't raised really any religion, because I no longer practice that religion that I was raised in. Mm-hmm. And she and her partner and her having a baby, and he's Catholic, and she asked me if we could baptize her baby. And my husband and I are married, but we're not married through the Catholic Church. Can mm-hmm. we still do that?
That's an interesting question. So the child in question that the parents are asking you this about are the parents of that child Catholic?
My daughter's not Catholic, but her partner or the person she's having a baby with, her boyfriend, he's Catholic.
Okay, this is
and
a very good question.
Catholic.
So let's first of all say that it is important, very important, that the child get baptized, but under certain circumstances, it's not advisable. And I think this is one of them. And for this reason, Mary, because baptism is the sacrament of initiation, the first sacrament of initiation. You can think of it like a foundation for a building. If there's no foundation there, you really can't build a building because it's going to collapse if it's just built on sand or dirt. So to put the foundation first then enables you to build everything that will rise above it. And that's what baptism is, if you think of it analogously. It's like that foundation. So once that foundation is there, then all the other sacraments can be received. Without that sacrament, none of the other sacraments can be received. So the problem arises here, not that the church doesn't want this child to be baptized, but the church says, rightly so, that when someone is baptized, he or she now has a right to, and really a duty to, receive the other sacraments if possible. And since your daughter and her boyfriend are not planning to live as Catholics, they're not planning, I'm guessing, to raise their child as Catholic, then this deprives that grandchild of yours of her birthright.
Well, that's why I asked her. She said that they wanted to raise the baby Catholic, okay, and they were looking for a godparent. But I'm like, wow, I don't, you know, I'm not Catholic. My husband is, but we're not even married in the Catholic faith. So my husband was like, I don't feel comfortable baptizing the baby, not because I don't want to, but because I feel like we're living in sin and he's not really what I would say a practicing Catholic because he doesn't go to Mass.
Right. I get it. So you're right. So, and thank you for clarifying that for me, because that was a detail that had escaped my notice. So let me put it this way. There's the music. How about this? Can you hold? Because I want to give you an answer. I just don't have time. Can you hold, Mary? All right. I'm coming right back to you on the other side of this. Plus everyone else who's holding, thanks for your patience. I am coming to your calls as well. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Yes, that's true.